following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I pay for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
Hey, welcome to a Thursday. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at 3 o'clock Eastern. Yes, that's when I do the live show, as of now. But that's about to change. The show is heard on the Progressive Voices Network at this point, Tuesday through Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern. For the longest time, we've been talking about moving this show, the live show, to 5 p.m. so that it airs live on Progressive Voices at 5 o'clock. But it was a whole logistical nightmare. Well, Progressive Voices has moved all of its streaming operations over to TuneIn with a partnership with TuneIn. Still working out some of the bugs, as you've heard. There are moments of dead air and there are some delays. But it's a work in progress. The other part of the work in progress, at least where I'm concerned, happens Monday. So beginning Monday, we move back to 5 days a week. So, I instituted the Music Monday Sunset Sessions shows. And never fear, I mean, we'll still cover the news, breaking news and important information. But, what better way to start the week than with something to sort of take our collective minds off of the insanity. So anyway, I don't know who's going to be joining us Monday yet, but starting Monday, this program moves to 5 p.m. Eastern. So those of you on YouTube who are now or listening to the live stream at 3 Eastern, again, on Monday, we move to 5 o'clock. So 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. Everything else remains the same. Some people yesterday were asking, well, what happens to YouTube? We're still on YouTube, right now we're streaming out to Facebook Live. Hi, Facebook Live. And to Periscope on Twitter and to YouTube. So all of that will still happen, but it will be 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. And if you can't make the live show, we will miss you. And I apologize, but all the archives will still be available. You can watch it on Facebook, on YouTube, on NicoleSandler.com. You can listen as a podcast. All the ways that you listen or watch the show now will still be available, except there will not be a live show at 3 Eastern anymore. Tomorrow will be the last day of that. And Monday, we go live at 5. So the good news is I won't be rushed off because right now what happens is I end the show at 4 Eastern, and then I've got to get the audio, make sure it times out to exactly 60 minutes for Progressive Voices, and upload it again. And I've got to get that done by, really like 4:30 in order to make sure the file transfers and it arrives in time to get loaded into the Progressive Voices programming. Since that won't be necessary anymore, I'm sure we'll have many more days where we do overtime. So the overtime, obviously, will be on Progressive Voices until 6 Eastern, and then we'll move over. So the live stream will end at 6 Eastern. I think Leslie Marshall comes on Progressive Voices at 6. But if we're doing in the middle of something, I have more content to cover, which these days, oh boy, do we can stay on longer. And the video, everything else other than the Progressive Voices live stream will go as long as we need to go. All right. So anyway, thanks for bearing with me. If I told you, we really thought that this change was going to happen by Thanksgiving. I thought, we were shooting for me to go live at 5 in time for the impeachment trial. That's how long this has been a work in progress, but we're that close. So Those of you who can't join us for the live show, I'm really sorry, but I got to do what I got to do. All right. So, well, my goodness. Oh, shoot. There's a lot going on today. And I'm kind of outraged because a little while ago, I had to go out to an appointment. So I'm in the car and I'm hearing Bill Barr step up to the microphone for a press conference, right? So he makes a statement about the unrest around the country. And sure enough, he did exactly what I was expecting him to do. He specifically mentioned Antifa when he was ostensibly listing the examples of extremists hijacking peaceful protests. But the only group he mentioned was Antifa. Here's just a little bit of what he said and when he called out Antifa, which really kind of pissed me off.
At some demonstrations, however, there are groups that exploit the opportunity to engage in such crimes as looting. And finally, at some demonstrations, there are extremist agitators who are hijacking the protests to pursue their own separate and violent agenda. We have evidence that Antifa and other similar extremist groups, as well as actors of a variety of different political persuasions, been involved in instigating and participating in the violent activity.
Excuse me?
And we are also seeing foreign actors playing all sides to exacerbate the violence.
Okay, a couple of things there. So number one, first time ever, he called out foreign actors for getting in there and instigating trouble. So at least he did that. So there's foreign actors. And then what he said was, where's the quote? We have evidence that Antifa and other similar extremist groups, as well as actors of a variety of different political persuasions, have been involved in instigating and participating in the violent activity. Okay, so basically you call out who you've the group that you've ascribed to being a far left organization. And I'm here to tell you that's not the case. So I found a post. Now, this was shared by someone else. I don't know where it originated. Apparently, it originated on an Antifa Facebook page. But as you'll hear when I read this statement, there is no official Antifa, and there are a number of pages, and I have no idea who this person is. But he or she says what they say so eloquently, and as I'm watching the media echoing Trump and Barr's line of bullshit about Antifa being the instigators here, I get angrier and angrier every day. So this statement speaks very well for me. So let me read it. It's an open letter to Donald Trump. And it says, "Dear Mr. Trump, let us be perfectly clear. Antifa, in quotes, isn't an organization. There's no membership, no meetings, no dues, no rules, no leaders, no structure. It is literally an idea and nothing more. Even the claim of this author to represent Antifa is one made unilaterally for the purposes of this communication and nothing more. There is no governing body nor trademark owner to dispute the author's right to represent Antifa. Antifa is a neologism constructed from a contraction of the phrase anti-fascist. The truth is, there's no such thing as being anti-fascist. Either you're a decent human being with a conscience, or you're a fascist. The ostensible president of the United States has today openly declared that he is a fascist and that he intends to turn the military power of the United States into a fascist tool. Now, there is no question, and we can stop pretending that this man represents anything but the worst in humanity, which his supporters embody. And that is the only effect his words will have. It will likely be no problem for Leo, I don't know what Leo, L-E-O, I don't know what that is, to identify the author of this document, who has also maintained the Antifa page on Facebook since founding it in 2017. The author of this document is unconcerned with that inevitability because neither that author nor this document has been involved in a crime of any sort in any way. But since both the president, in quotation marks, and the media insist on acting as though Antifa is this big, scary organization, the author supposes it's time for, quote, Antifa to make a statement. Thus, Antifa supports and defends the right of all people to live free from oppressive abuse of power, whether that power is unjustly derived from wealth, status as an employer, or political popularity. Particularly, Antifa depends and supports the right of oppressed and marginalized people, Antifa defends and supports the right of oppressed and marginalized people to protest, march, and engage in civil disobedience in pursuit of justice. While it is never our intent to engage in violent or destructive behavior, we cannot and will not take responsibility for telling people how they are allowed to be righteously outraged. We prefer and encourage nonviolent action. We also understand that some people just aren't feeling that nice anymore. Their feelings are entirely justified, and it is neither our role nor our privilege to tell them otherwise. Mass civil disobedience is what happens when people say they're hurting and who's ever hurting them refuses to stop. Stop hurting them. Fix your broken systems. Get real and meaningful psychological evaluations and background checks. Police in some nations have to pass a more stringent test to carry pepper spray than any police department in the U.S. or the U.S. military have in place. As a direct and possibly deliberate consequence, our military and paramilitary personnel simply cannot be assumed to be fighting in the interests of the people of this country. We've all seen the photos. This destruction and burning and looting is largely the behavior of outsiders, white people, taking advantage of the situation both to enrich themselves by looting under cover of the protests and to provide excuses for uncontrolled fascist elements within our military and police forces as plausible cover for killing more black, brown, and poor people without fear of sanction. The so-called accelerationists who have committed to ensuring that any time a marginalized community stands up and demands justice, construct a narrative of criminality and destruction that white bigots and affluent oligarchs who benefit from our broken system to validate their bigotry and injustice retroactively. They are successful in this for two reasons. Because people like you are more than happy to passive-aggressively reap the benefits of pretending to believe this destruction is the act of the oppressed. This game has gone on for decades, on an endless loop, since the very dawn of the civil rights era. And we the people are saying no more. And that, quote, President Trump is your solution? Get the dirt out of your government and administration. Ideally, resign now and take your VP and cabinet with you. Nancy Pelosi isn't a great deal of improvement, but she'll only be president for a few months. You can't arrest 100 million of us, sir, and you would be well advised not to try. If you think that targeting and making an example of the author of this document will get you anywhere, you may rest assured that this author is more than prepared to allow his real name to be used as a rallying cry for justice and civil disobedience from coast to coast. It is time for you and everyone who thinks like you to understand that whether black, red, brown, white, or any other color, Americans are done living in a nation of empty platitudes and broken promises. Traditionally, this type of document is accompanied by a list of demands. So here are our demands. Universal single-payer health care without regard for citizenship status. Universal basic income with a federal job guarantee, under which the federal government becomes the employer of last resort. Involuntary unemployment is a function of profiteering by fascist capitalist oligarchs who are willing to sacrifice the lives of others for their own enrichment. It must end. The abolition of right to work laws, which do exactly the opposite of ensuring anybody's right to work. Publicly funded higher education. Robust and effective social welfare programs to include childcare, education, employment training and counseling, parenting skills training, and life skills training, including fiscal education. A requirement that functional proficiency in media, political, and economic literacy be demonstrated to graduate high school. The creation of a publicly funded, nonpartisan media source to serve as the primary source of government information to be overseen and managed day-to-day by a coalition of well-known communicators, political scientists, and other experts in propaganda to strip all bias from official information before it is broadcast. I love that idea. Federal charges of treason filed against anyone willfully and knowingly attempting to minimize public perception of the impact and risks of the coronavirus. Good one. Reform of whistleblower laws to ensure they have teeth, and particularly to ensure that a whistleblower, acting in good faith, is not identified to the public ever. In the end, Mr. quote, President, the simple reality is that Antifa, in quotes, isn't a thing. You can't end it, you can't arrest it, and you can't silence it. Nor, in any decent nation, would the attempt even be made. Antifa means anti-fascism. The only position that opposes that is fascism. In the end, there is no organization that you can declare terrorists. You, sir, and yours are the terrorists, and your victims are done putting up with it. America is not, in spite of having an openly admitted fascist as, quote, president, a fascist nation. We've had wars about this. The fascists are 0-2. Please, Mr., quote, president, let's not try to make it 0-3, because it will never, ever be 1-2. And none of us wants to see the death toll from your attempt to make it so. Currently, media and other actors wishing to contact this author may do so through the page. Should Mr. Zuckerberg, who has displayed plenty of authoritarian and fascist tendencies himself, decide not to host that page any longer, this document will be updated. Best regards, signed, in quotation marks, Antifa. Well, I wanted to contact this author. I think that's a brilliantly stated, if a bit lengthy, statement. But yes, this is what I've been screaming for the last 2 weeks since Donald Trump, or week and a half, whatever it's been, since Trump has insisted on calling out Antifa. There is no Antifa. I'm Antifa. I'm anti-fascism. You should be too. And what kills me is people that I know, personally know, who should know better, are believing the bullshit that, oh, it must be Antifa starting this because, well, the media is saying it. Well, the media is doing the bidding of this administration who wants to call them out. But you know what? You know who was arrested for some of the sabotage of the peaceful protests? Radically motivated violent extremists. Among them, the Proud Boys and the Boogaloo Boys. But Bill Barr didn't mention them today, did he? No, just their appointed boogeyman, Antifa. Give me a fucking break. All right, there's my rant for the day. Ah, God, it makes me so angry. I have stuff here. I have, again, I've got a bunch of videos queued up of the cops beating peaceful protesters, beating people who haven't done anything wrong. There's one that someone just sent me, listener Bruce, he's a truck driver who I guess he listens on the app in the truck, sent me a link to, let me see if I can't bring this up. It is, he found it on Sean King's Facebook page and I'm able to access it here. Let me see if I can't bring it up on the YouTube for you. Somebody's calling. Let's see who this is. Hi, who's this? Hello?
Hi.
Wait,
hold.
Yeah, who's this?
This is Pete from, oh, I see the delay.
Yeah, there's a
delay. I'm actually talking to you.
Okay? You are. I don't have people. It's just me.
Okay. So anyway, I've been thinking about this, and You know, I'm one of the old activists from the 60s, anti-Vietnam War and stuff. And people are making a lot of comparisons and stuff. But I'm thinking one of the main differences, which is optimistic, is that we more or less are America now. And Trump has decidedly put himself on the side of anti-America.
Yeah.
Whereas Nixon did represent the moral majority as much as we wanted to deny it in those days,
mm-hmm.
because America itself was very right-wing more in those days, and it was more the youth and the hippies who were standing up for idealism in those days, but they were the minority. Today, we look in the streets, and it's all demographics of ages and
yep.
races, and diversity is way more a thing now than it used to be. Separation used to be the thing. And so I think we are America, and I think that bodes well for us as prevailing over the Nazi right wing and Trumpists
yeah,
and
well,
Republicans. And
I think
that.
You're right. We just need to push back against the propaganda, and the propaganda is strong. I mean, they're out there.
Yeah.
So that's the reason I read that. Look, I knew it was a lengthy diatribe, but I thought it was really important. I shared it on Facebook, but I said, well, I need to read this on the air because it's what I've been screaming about for the last week or two. So yeah, the people that are protesting are peaceful. They're out there making a statement. They're not the ones perpetrating the violence and doing the looting. And to conflate the protesters with rioters is disingenuous and it's dangerous. And we need to stop them. And we need to stop them from vilifying Antifa as if it's this big organization like the Proud Boys or the Boogaloo Boys who are organized to go out there and stir up shit. So, anyway. Thank you for calling. How are you all holding up out there in California? How was it last night?
Well, you know what? They just lifted the curfew
today.
Did
they? Yay. Very good. Yeah. I'm glad to hear it. Awesome. All right. I got to run because I want to take care of this, and we got Howie Klein coming up in a couple of minutes. But thank you for calling.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. So I'm going to play for you this one video that listener Bruce, truck driver Bruce, sent to me. This was in Indianapolis. And for those of you who aren't watching the video, I will narrate for you. And it starts with a woman, go figure, a black woman, being restrained by a cop. From what I understand, she was peacefully protesting when the cop accosted her. And he grabbed her, and as you see from the still, if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook Live or Periscope or any video, you see one cop walking in front of her, and the cop who's restraining her. Now watch the cop who's holding her hands behind her back. Because as soon as I start this video playing, you're going to see him reach around and grab her breast. Yes, grab her breast. And she shoves him, I believe, with her elbow and tries to break away from him. And that's when this other Neanderthal asshole who's in front of her grabs his billy club and hits her in the stomach. Sorry. Here it is. All right, so. And oh my God. They're just beating her senseless. And you hear people going, why her? Now a cop is on top of her. Somebody has another woman behind them and cops are racing up on her. And then you see the original woman whose breast the cop grabbed. I've got dozens of these, and they don't stop. It just doesn't stop. And it's got to fucking stop. This is insane already. And what do we get from this White House? It's not only opposite world, this is the surreal world. You have that McEnany woman, that fucking idiot who is parading around as the new press secretary, by the way, who called Donald Trump out during primary season for what he is. She was not a supporter. She knows what he is full well because she said it on television when she was a CNN pundit. But I guess let bygones be bygones, because, you know, she's now the press secretary, so nothing he says is wrong. So a reporter yesterday at the press briefing that she's now back to holding at 2 o'clock daily in the White House briefing room asked her about Trump's trek through Lafayette Park after the protesters had been cleared out with tear gas, which she denied it was tear gas, but it was tear gas, and flashbang grenades. And he said, was it really necessary? Was that important that he pose for a picture in front of the church? And she said, oh yeah. And listen to how she what she compared it to.
The president wanted to send a very powerful message that we will not be overcome by looting, by rioting, by burning. This is not what defines America. And going and standing by St. John's Church was a very important moment. And I would note that through all of time, we've seen presidents and leaders across the world who have had leadership moments and very powerful symbols that were important for a nation to see at any given time to show a message of resilience and determination, like Churchill. Okay.
You see where this is going, right? She's talking about presidents have invoked these images that are important for the American people to see, and she goes on to Churchill. Oh, keep going, McEnany.
Him inspecting the bombing damage, it sent a powerful message of leadership to the British people, and George W. Bush throwing out the ceremonial first pitch after 9/11, and Jimmy Carter putting on a sweater to encourage energy savings, and George H.W. Bush signing the Americans with Disabilities Act flanked by two disabled Americans. And for this president, it was powerful and important to send a message that the rioters, the looters, the anarchists, they will not prevail, that burning churches are not what America's about.
Oh,
and that
God.
Moment, holding the Bible up, is something that has been widely hailed by Franklin Graham and others. And it was a very important symbol for the American people to see that we will get through this through unity and through faith.
There's your funny for today. By Franklin Graham and others. Like anybody should give a shit what Franklin Graham says? You know, from our last caller and that statement, I probably should invite Frank Schaefer back on the show. Frank Schaefer grew up as the son of Francis Schaefer, who was like the Pope of the evangelical movement, of the religious right, when it first started, along with Jerry Falwell and Franklin Graham's daddy, the late Billy Graham, all those heinous creatures who pretend that they have a direct line to God. Give me a fucking break. That was she might as well be Kellyanne. Kaylee, I believe, is her name. McEnany. I'm just calling her the ninny because that's what she is. Putting that charade, that ridiculous display of ego and idiocy on par with at Churchill. You gotta be kidding me. The only thing that was funnier than that, and I have to take it as the absurdity that it is and laugh at it, because if I take it too seriously, I get angry and I get depressed. But so it's better to laugh at the inanity of these statements, like what the ninny just said. But even better is this statement from Donald Trump. We had heard that on, I guess it was Sunday, when the unrest was strongest, was loudest, things were burning, and the White House fence had been breached, that Donald Trump was herded down to the basement, to the bunker in the White House, which is where Dick Cheney was brought on 9/11. Right. So they rushed Trump down there. But we've learned since that he was so upset by the media reports that he was, you know, herded down to the bunker and he was hiding out there while the protesters were going on. So he was asked about it on a radio interview. I think it was with Brian Kilmeade, one of the Fox and Fiends. And I'm just preparing you. Listen carefully. This is a Trump clip you're going to want to hear, because this is what Trump said he did in the bunker. He wasn't there to hide. He wasn't there because you know, because the fence had been breached or there was danger. No, he was just going down to inspect it.
Well, it was a false report. I wasn't down. I went down during the day, and I was there for a tiny, little short period of time, and it was much more for an inspection.
So you tell me, Mr. President, they didn't say to you, you have to go downstairs. My responsibility is your welfare. They didn't limit you at all in the house?
Nope, they didn't tell me that at all, but they said it would be a good time to go down, take a look, because maybe sometime you're going to need it.
Yeah, so the fence has been breached. There, half of D.C., you know, there are fires everywhere. The country is going nuts. And, oh, you know, they thought this would be a good time to go down and inspect it in case you need it sometime in the future. First of all, Donald Trump is nothing but a liar. He lies every single time he opens his mouth. He's also the world's biggest asshole.
I want to tell you a story about the brand new world's biggest asshole.
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 It's a brand new story about the brand new world's biggest asshole.
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 His name is
Donald J. Trump.
And he's the new world's biggest asshole.
You know what? I do have one clip I can play first. I'm sorry, Howie. I'm going to be 2 minutes late. Let me just play this for you really quickly because there is a parody song I found. Actually, my husband sent me this one, but a few other people did as well. I got it from a few people today. So very quickly, before we get Howie on the line, here is the Bunker Boy.
Courtney J.
Bunker Boy. Don't lie, you got scared and hid in the basement in the middle of the night. You're not so tough, no, it's a sorry sight. So take your Bible, shove it up your ass, and turn on the fucking lights.
Oh yeah.
Bunker Boy, Bunker Boy. Boy.
There you go, Bunker Boy. You know what time it is now.
Whoa,
sorry about that. We didn't want that to happen. But you know what time it is now, don't ya?
You a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, and I was negligent. I neglected to tell you who did that song, and her name is, I just lost it again. Her name is Courtney J. Courtney, J-A-Y-E. I will post Bunker Boy on the blog today at NicoleSandler.com along with the podcast of today's show. Hello, Howie Klein.
Hello. And, you know, Courtney was not just some unknown person, you know, laboring away in a garage. She had a real career and was very, very much acclaimed in the music business.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'd never heard of her before. That's a great song.
You should look her up on the Google.
I certainly
or,
will.
Or something.
I certainly will, because that song was all of 45 seconds, and it was perfect.
The song is beautiful also. It's a really, really good song. I put it up on my blog, too, and
awesome.
It's just fantastic.
It really is. It just hit the nail on the head. So, Howie Klein, so we had a big election day on Tuesday. And it wasn't great. The good news from Tuesday is that Steve King is gone. And for those who don't remember Steve King of Iowa, the nine-term racist, congressman. Tell me I didn't pull it. Great. I had it handy here yesterday. Here we go. This is not Steve King. I did have the clip. I thought I had it handy, but I don't. Is when he called, he said of some of the dreamers. Well, they're not all valedictorians, you know. Oh, here it is. I do have it. Here we go.
They aren't all valedictorians. They weren't all brought in by their parents. For everyone who's a valedictorian, there's another 100 out there that they weigh 130 pounds and they've got calves the size of cantaloupes because they're hauling 75 pounds of marijuana across the desert.
Okay, that's Steve King. Steve King was defeated in a primary. Yes.
And not just defeated, but like smashed. I think he got 30-some-odd percent. Oh, I mean, someone who's been in office for 18 years and in a Republican primary and only gets 36%, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, that is pretty bad. But, you know, it's also the case that everybody was against him. Obviously, the Democrats hated him, but even his party turned against him because he's such a blatant racist and bigot.
Is the key word there, of course.
Yeah.
Right. Because they're okay with it as long as you just use dog whistles and you're not too out front with it. But because he just says it plainly like that, they can't be seen, you know, going along with that, I guess.
Exactly.
But you're talking, you've got a piece coming up at downwithtyranny.com after right as the show ends today, Howie, that talks about Iowa could completely go, not just Steve King, but everybody from Joni Ernst on down. This could be a big blue wave in Iowa, huh?
It could be. I mean, the Democrats managed to pick the worst possible candidate to run for the Senate. So she and Biden will be at the top of the ticket. So that's not very attractive. But my contention is that this isn't going to be an election about how good or bad usually, the yep. Democratic candidates are. It's just going to be about Trump. This is just going to be a referendum about Trump. And there are almost no other issues. It's just Trump, Trump, Trump. Iowa, you know, is being devastated by the pandemic way more than most places, especially that one district. Now, just as a little context, there are four congressional districts in Iowa. Three of them the Democrats already hold because they had one and then they won two more in 2018 when the anti-red wave swept over Iowa. And they took back five seats in the state legislature, so they're close to winning back control of at least the House. The Senate, the state Senate, it's another story. And then they've got a terrible Trumpist governor who has made every wrong decision, just like Trump does, in the pandemic. And some of the counties in Iowa are worse off than in terms of how many people have gotten sick with COVID per million people in the population. They're worse off than than any country in Europe, worse off than Italy, for example.
Wow.
And everything has gone really badly there because Kim Reynolds, the governor, has made every wrong mistake, and they listen to Trump and they don't listen to science.
Amazing.
So I suspect that the wave is going to be even bigger in Iowa than people expect it to be. I expect that Biden will win Iowa. I expect that this awful candidate that Chuck Schumer decided should be the next senator will win. I expect that the last House seat that the Republicans hold in this very, very red rural district will be won by J.D. Shulton,
a
good, solid progressive. So
yeah.
J.D. is not just some run-of-the-mill corporate Democrat. He's the opposite of that. He's an exceptional leader. He's very well-liked. Remember, what I've always been saying is that it usually takes two times before somebody can overthrow an incumbent. This is his second run. So he spent, all of the 2018 campaign introducing himself. Mm-hmm. He drove every single one of the counties, and they have more than two dozen counties, and he has gotten to be well known. He's got a really good personality. He's a former baseball player as well. Mm-hmm. People can relate to him, and they like him. Independents like him, Democrats like him, and even some non-ideological Republicans like him. And I think he's got a very good shot. Now, he's not running against Steve King, so that's a little bit of a problem in a red district like that. But the person who did win, the state senator named Feenstra, is
it's like what you said a minute ago. Steve King is very blatant.
Mm-hmm.
This guy isn't blatant, but I mean, in Feenstra's attack on King, he made the point that King couldn't get the stuff accomplished, that he was ineffective.
Oh,
not
God.
That he was doing the bad thing, but he just couldn't get the things he was saying accomplished.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He, for example, King is notorious for wanting to build a wall and, you know, put barbed wire on it and electrocute anybody that touches it and all this kind of stuff and, you know, compared people to animals who are trying to get in the United States. Well, this guy doesn't disagree about the wall. In fact, he faults King for not getting the wall done.
Hmm.
So anyway, it's going to take more than just like, hey, I'm not Steve King,
right,
to convince independents in the 4th district to vote Republican this time. So I have good feelings about Iowa for November.
Glad to hear it. So aside from Steve King getting defeated on Tuesday, we spent the last couple of weeks running through the calendar, and we're going to keep going today because there are more primaries coming up. But the races we were looking at on Tuesday in Indiana and Maryland and Montana didn't really work out the way we wanted them to, did they? Or Pennsylvania, actually.
No, basically the congressional races didn't do well for progressives. Progressives lost. So today, if you're just a normal person who is involved with politics and gets a lot of emails about politics, you might get the impression that a lot of the organizations are saying, we won, you know, great day, 80% of our candidates won.
Yeah.
Well, they're talking about lower, down ballot races. So not Congress, not Senate.
Mm.
They're talking about, you know, races for county boards and city council.
Which are important, too. Those are certainly important.
And I'm not saying those are unimportant races.
Mm-hmm.
But you and I have been talking about
Congress.
Congressional races,
yes.
House and Senate races, and and progressives didn't win anything on Tuesday. They lost it all.
Yeah.
Whereas, there are some, it's very nice. You know, for example, let me just give you an example.
Okay.
In Philadelphia, there's a horrible, corrupt Democratic machine, and it's been teetering in the last few years. It hasn't been doing well. And this kid came out of nowhere, you know, like a Bernie type kid, and just like beat one of the Philadelphia bosses of the machine for a state Senate race. And that's a huge victory.
Yeah,
that's great.
That is
so
great.
We're going to have this, you know, Bernie-crat in as a state senator or a real activist, a strong, very, very strong person to think of, who will be able to think about in the future for higher office maybe, and he beat a real bad guy. So that kind of thing is really good when that happens.
Yep.
And it did happen all around the country, and we should be happy about that. But in terms of Congress, no.
Right. Got it. So that's the June 2nd primary. It's kind of like a mini Super Tuesday, the biggest one, obviously, since everything got all screwed up because of the COVID. So still to
and they're
come.
Still counting votes, by the way, because, so many people voted by
mail.
Yeah. There was a huge vote, especially among Democrats. I mean, Pennsylvania was really funny. You know, because so many more Democrats are requesting mail-in ballots than Republicans. It's hilarious.
That's good. So the next.
Well, in a way, it's good. I mean, especially good if Republicans decide at the last minute to chicken out and not go in to vote. It's
right.
Really good.
Exactly. But I did just see a recent poll just in the last day or two about more people, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was a much bigger number of people who said, obviously, that they want to exercise their right to vote, but they don't think they should have to risk their lives or getting sick in order to do so. So that's the reason why so many are asking for, you know, absentee ballots, mail-in ballots. Sense to me.
And the funny thing about it, and it's going to be damaging, more and more damaging for him, is Trump is telling Republicans, no, don't do it. And it's crooked, and it's vote theft, and don't do it. And the state parties are getting very nervous about this because Republican state parties for decades have been urging Republicans to vote early by mail-in ballots.
Uh-huh.
And this has been a very, very common thing where until very recently,
Republicans have outvoted Democrats in early voting, in early mail-in voting. And then it sort of started to change. Now it's gigantically changed. But Republican state parties have you know, they believe in this. They I mean, Utah is an all a mail-in ballot state, and that's
right.
A very Republican state.
That's right.
So it's not, you know, but Trump is going and telling, you know, all of his moron listeners and fans, don't do it, don't vote that way, and they are going to have to risk their lives to go in to vote. So it's, you know, I think some of them are catching on that there's something wrong there. Although I'll tell you something funny. A friend of mine in Florida who's doesn't admit it, but he's a Trumper in a big way. He likes to say he's independent and neutral, but he's a complete Trumper. So he's been seeing the stuff I've been posting about how right-wing elements are infiltrating the demonstrations and protests and turning them violent and trying to do everything they can to discredit the left and trying to blame Antifa. Whatever they call it, whatever Trump calls it. And he's angry about that and doesn't understand it. And he says, well, you just listen to the Washington Post. They're not trustworthy. And then he'll quote something to me from some obscure 4chan source or something on Reddit, like from a right-wing lunatic on Reddit. It's just so funny or sad or whatever it is. But we're in a situation in this country where, you know, there's such a divergence of opinion, and there's that I mean you hear people talking about a civil war. I hope it doesn't come to that, but it's almost like there are two countries now.
No, I fully agree. And actually, I should send you, I posted it on my Facebook page, this long rant from somebody who runs an Antifa Facebook page, who wrote an open letter to Donald Trump, basically calling him out and saying, what you're doing is bullshit. Here's the reality. There is no Antifa. There's no organization. There's no dues. There's no membership. It doesn't exist. You're trying to, you know, you're conflating everything. So anyway, I'll send it to you because it's a brilliant rant and you should send it to your friend.
Yeah, I mean, my friend is beyond being able to understand that.
I know.
The idea of anti-fascist.
That's what it
is.
Who's
not an anti-fascist?
Exactly.
Well, fascist, not anti-fascist.
Right. Exactly. All right, let's get back to, because we're gonna get to the end of the hour again and not have gone through any of this. So the next primary election is coming up Tuesday. We already talked about this, Georgia, where you mentioned Lisa Ring, and West Virginia.
Right, Lisa is running for the House.
Yes,
and that's a very, you know, she's running in what I think will be the next district in Georgia to flip. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be this time, although it might be. Lisa's a strong candidate. Buddy Carter is the Trump enabler who's the standing in her way of getting into Congress. She's good, and she ran last time. She ran a decent campaign last time. I don't know that it's going to happen this time, but it could.
Uh-huh.
She's good. The big race, of course, is for the U.S. Senate seat held by David Perdue.
Yes.
And Perdue is nothing. He's just a nothing. I mean, I there are all these nothing candidates on both sides of the aisle. He's a Republican nothing. Doesn't mean anything. Doesn't stand for anything. Trump says jump, he jumps. Trump says stop jumping, he stops jumping. That's it. That's all he is. Nothing. Zero. And I think Georgians know there's no leadership there. They realize that. They've elected this guy to be a leader, and he's not a leader. I mean, mm-hmm. that could be said almost of anyone who's elected to office these days. But there's a really good Democrat running for that seat who is the mayor of the second biggest city in Georgia, I think, or second or third biggest, Columbus, Georgia. She was a two-time mayor, very, very successful, got, you know, great marks from all sides of the political spectrum for how mm-hmm. she ran the city. And her name is Teresa Tomlinson, and she's running for the Senate now. The establishment candidate is this guy, John Ossoff. I don't know what he calls himself.
John Ossoff. He's the one who was in the special election that they spent so much, the most expensive election ever, and he lost. So he's running again?
And he's running again, and he's basically Schumer's candidate. And again, another nothing, you know.
Right.
I mean, if he gets into the Senate, I mean, Schumer is teeing it up. So there's going to be like a whole bunch of nothing candidates. They're just nothing. Just a garden variety Democrats, better than a garden variety Republican, but still nothing. No one who is any kind of a threat to his so-called leadership. And, you know, I mean, the one who won, you know, candidates he is making sure get in position. And if the wave is big enough, they'll win.
Yeah.
Although I don't think Ossoff can win. He's well-known enough and disliked enough so that he probably won't win.
Wow.
So the primary between him and Teresa is on Tuesday. Unfortunately, there's another candidate in there who's also terrible. She's even worse. She's a former, quote, former Republican who calls herself a Democrat now.
Right.
And she ran for lieutenant governor last time when Stacey Abrams ran for governor. So people get confused and they think they ran together. No, it wasn't a ticket. One ran for governor and the other ran for lieutenant governor, and they didn't really have anything to do with each other. They weren't part of a team. And she's way too conservative, and also not just conservative, but kind of like an air of corruption around her. She has no chance of winning, but unfortunately, she's going to wind up taking away votes to make it not a referendum or not a clear choice between Ossoff and Tomlinson. Unfortunately,
right? Okay. So that's Georgia. West Virginia.
Yeah, and there's another Senate race, but that's a special election that doesn't take place on Tuesday.
Gotcha. The other election taking place this coming Tuesday is West Virginia, and you have a candidate, Kathy Kunkel?
Yes. So West Virginia is divided in three. There's a northern district, a southern district, and a middle district. Kathy is running in the middle district against Alex Mooney. Again, just another nothing.
Right.
A Republican who just does whatever Trump says and, you know, has no mind of his own, nothing to say and nothing to do and no interest in anything except making sure nothing happens. And she's real good. It's an extremely red district. I would think it would have to be a two-cycle situation for her to be able to win this district back. I can't imagine that a Democrat could just walk in, no matter how big the wave is,
right,
and win it in one shot.
Especially West Virginia.
A candidate, she deserves support because, you know, it's always possible. We're building her up for a 2022 race.
Okay, that sounds good. So that's happening this Tuesday, June 9th. The next race after that isn't until the 23rd. And I think we talked about these last week briefly. Kentucky, the Senate race, we did talk about that. I asked if there was anybody better than Amy McGrath.
Right, and you know, Charles Booker is the way to go. He's surging right now, and it's looking to me, you know, like the impossible, what I thought impossible could actually happen. Now, we've endorsed Booker. He was a state rep from Louisville, and he just recently resigned so he could run full-time against McConnell.
Right.
But he's got to beat McGrath first, again, the Schumer candidate. And no one thought that he could win because Schumer has made sure that McGrath would be, you know, so loaded with money that she could crush anybody. But it doesn't seem to be working out that way.
Oh,
she
really?
Is loaded with money, you know, tens of millions. I don't know, tens of millions, but over $10 million already. But for some reason,
not cutting
Kentucky
through.
Voters are looking at her and saying, I don't know about that. You know, we want to win this time. And winning in Kentucky, we've tried before to get like a Republican light candidate, and that's all she is. And why don't we go for a real Democrat this time?
That would be nice.
So there's a big surge for Booker.
Wow.
So there's a chance. It'd be amazing if that happened, but there is a chance.
Cool. All right. We also talked about New York last week. In fact, Nate McMurray joined us for a segment on the show. Virginia is June 23rd as well. Then after that, the following week, June 30th.
We haven't talked about Robin Wilt.
No. Okay.
She's in the next district over from Nate.
Okay. Who is this? Robin
Rochester.
Who?
They share Monroe County, although basically she has all of Monroe County except for a little tiny sliver that's in Nate's district. But she is, she's a Bernie-crat who was a delegate to the Democratic National Convention for Bernie last time. She's a city council member in a small city, And she's one of the best candidates that Blue America has endorsed this year. And she's running against a, you know, again, a conservative, nothing Democrat, just a nothing, just sits there. You know, he was a corrupt Democrat in the state legislature and in county politics. And now he just sits in Congress and is not part of anything. I mean, he's never going to accomplish anything in his entire career. And Robin is a real leader.
What's her last name? Robin what?
Going to go to Congress. I mean, you know, it's not enough to just say, well, you know, someone is going to join the squad.
Right.
That's not enough to make somebody win a race, but that's not what I'm trying to do now. I'm just trying to point out what kind of a leader she is going to be. But yes, she's going to join the squad. She is amazing. She will be absolutely one of the best members of Congress if she gets in.
Nice.
Absolutely.
What is her last name? Robin
Elect
who?
Her, help her win, and then come back to me and say, Howie, you were right. She's one of the best members of Congress. I told your listeners that about AOC before she won.
Yes, you did.
And, if you believed me then or you didn't believe me then and you see it now,
yep.
Please help Robin Wilt. She'll be as good. She'll be as good as AOC.
Okay. Robin, say her last name again. Wells?
W-I-L-T. Robin Wilt.
Robin Wilt.
In fact, you should have her on your show.
Okay.
If you'd like, I'll introduce you to her.
She's
amazing, and she's so brilliant.
Okay.
Incredibly articulate and brilliant woman.
Cool. Question for you from the chat room. Environmental Coffee House is asking, can you ask Howie about Tracy Matrano in the 23rd against Tom Reed? Do you know her?
Yeah. I mean... undeservedly, Reed has a good reputation in his district. Of course, Matrano would be a better member, but it's unfortunate that Reed does not deserve the kind of reputation he has of being like a moderate. He's not a moderate. He's a hardcore conservative.
Oh.
But he does have this reputation it's in a red district. So without having the Trumpists against him, he's going to have the whole Republican Party. The Democrats don't have enough to pull somebody over and independents like Reed. I wish they didn't. Then they shouldn't, but they do. So it makes it hard for Matrano. But yes, she's a good candidate, and people should, you know, obviously anyone who's there, who's in the district, I'm sure I don't have to tell them, they should vote for her.
Okay. She says she's in his district. He sucks and all my friends hate him, is what she said. So there you go. We've got people all over. All right. So that's New York, June 23rd. Virginia is that day as well. Is there anybody? I mean, Virginia has gone pretty blue in the last couple of years.
We move to Virginia. I do want to say that there are a bunch of other really excellent candidates running in New York.
Okay.
Some of whom I've gotten to know pretty well. And who are a pretty amazing bunch. I mean, I think there's been a lot of news recently about Jamal Bowman
running against Elliot Engel. Oh my God! First of all, I'm so glad you brought this up. Elliot Engel, first of all, is kind of creepy. Have you seen him during the whole impeachment thing? Because he heads one of the committees that was involved. Every time they did a press conference of any sort, he would like sort of get up there and just sort of lurk behind Nancy Pelosi. It was just very creepy. But he was caught on an open mic this week talking to the organizer of a rally dealing with the death of George Floyd. And I've got the tape here. It's hard to hear, but you need to listen anyway. He's asking for a slot to speak at this rally. And the organizer is saying, well, I don't know that I can fit you in. And here's what he said.
And I got to then go down the list, and it's just too many folks here.
If I didn't have a primary, I wouldn't care.
Say that again?
If I didn't have a primary, I wouldn't care.
If I didn't have a primary, I wouldn't care, is what
he
said.
Not only wouldn't he care, he doesn't live in the district anymore. He lives in Maryland. He hasn't been in the district since COVID started, because the district is one of the worst hit counties in America.
Oops. Yeah.
Both the Bronx part and the Westchester part. And he lives in Maryland.
Wow.
And he doesn't even come to the district. So when he said I wouldn't care if I didn't have a primary, he was talking about, first of all, this making this statement, second of all, even being in the district, and third of all, giving a damn about his constituents.
Yeah.
He really only has one constituent, or two, I should say. He doesn't have just one.
Nancy Pelosi.
He has two people that he cares about. One is Pelosi, and the other one is Benjamin Netanyahu. That is it. He doesn't care about anyone in that district. He doesn't care about anything except pleasing those two people.
Right. So Jamal Bowman, I believe, is
all whether Jamal was running against an idiot like Engel or not, Jamal is amazing. He's a very accomplished educator. He's a principal in a public school. A real, real smart guy. And again, someone who will make a difference in Congress.
Awesome.
I mean, Elliot Engel, I shouldn't say he doesn't make a difference. He does make a difference. Unfortunately, it's only for Benjamin Netanyahu. It's not for America. But Jamal is great. So he's running. Also, a guy in Southeast Queens, also a district that's considered to be one of the worst hit districts in America.
Wow.
A guy named Sean Chowdhury.
Yes, we talked about him last week.
Gregory Meeks.
Right, we talked about Sean last week.
He is widely considered the most corrupt Democrat in Congress. He, when Crowley was defeated, he took Crowley's job as the machine boss of Queens County, and Sean is running against him. Again, very, very, very tough. This guy is a long-term incumbent. He's been in there for a really long time. He's a Wall Street guy. 100%. When I say a Wall Street guy, I don't mean he ever worked on Wall Street. I mean he works for Wall Street.
Right.
He's on the House Financial Services Committee. He takes money from Wall Street, and he votes like a Republican. He votes against for deregulation. He's just awful, and you know, it's not a rich district, and there are a lot of people who could use some real representation there, and if they turn out, Sean will win.
Awesome. Yeah, we talked about him
last
week.
Like I said, there are a lot of good people. There are other people running as well who are really excellent. But it's very, very, very tough to win a primary. It doesn't mean we shouldn't try, and that's what Blue America is trying to do. But it's murderous. It is murderous for these people. And to just, you know, and most of our candidates, and I shouldn't say most, none of our candidates do this. No one just comes in and says, hey, I'm going to join the squad. Vote for me. I like everything Bernie likes. Vote
right.
for me. That is not how you win an election.
No.
It takes a lot of sweat and a lot of brains and a lot of organizing power to be able to win that. And it just infuriates me. Someone was complaining the other day about how she would have won her election, except I didn't support her, or Blue America didn't support her.
God.
She was telling you she had her election. You know, she got 6% of the vote. You think she would have gotten 7% of Blue America endorsed her? I mean, it's just amazing.
Wow.
They don't know what it takes.
No.
You know, why? If you don't know what it takes to win and you can't really do it, learn.
Yeah,
vote,
exactly.
Run into city council first.
That's right.
Don't just go right to Congress. Don't just go right for the U.S. Senate. Learn about politics. Learn what it takes. It does not take, I will be the next member of the squad. That is not going to do it. It hasn't done it for anybody, and it will not do it for anybody.
No, most definitely not. All right, Howie, we're late. I got to run. We'll pick up here again next week. I'm going to make a note. We got through New York, or if there's anybody else, we can start there. And
we get for New York, but let's start with New York again.
Okay, we'll do that. Thank you. Oh, next week, Howie, we're moving to, remember, I 6 months ago I mentioned maybe moving to 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. It's happening next week. So next Thursday, we'll go at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. Is that okay with you?
Better.
Awesome. Perfect. All right.
Now, do you want me to introduce you to Robin Wilt now?
Oh, that'd be great.
Okay, I'll do that right now.
All right, cool. Thank you, Howie Klein. I'll talk to you next week. And you, thank you for listening. See you tomorrow to wrap up this wonderful week we're living through. Oy, be safe. Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye.